This is the Monday Afternoon Show. We have Bob Elmendorf with us, and he's going to talk about what he will be, how he will be present at the Columbia County Fair. And Bob, welcome to the Monday Afternoon Show. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you, Karen. And appreciate being on WGXZ to talk about what Old Chatham Quaker Meeting has in store for the Columbia County Fair.
Okay, so you come from the group, which is the group of Quakers located in Old Chatham here, right up around
Chatham.
That's
correct, right.
And is it a specific group affiliated that's working on this right now, or is it just the Quakers?
The entire meeting is working on it. We're doing it as a meeting. And the Old Chatham Quaker Meeting has given their approval and full support to this project.
Wonderful.
What we're going to be doing is bringing a replica of a solitary housing unit. A solitary housing unit is a lockdown unit used in prisons throughout the United States, including New York State, to sequester an inmate for many different purposes. For a 23-hour lockdown from anywhere from 15 days to 15 to 20 years. Currently, there are 4,000 inmates in New York State in solitary lockdown in these SHUs. They call them special housing units, but they're really solitary housing units. And we're going to be bringing a replica of a solitary housing unit to the Columbia County Fair, and we'll be there for 6 days, and we'll be staffing that replica with volunteers from Old Chatham Quaker Meeting and from some other Quaker meetings, and we'll be answering questions on solitary housing unit, how we can eliminate the use of them in New York State, and we'll also be talking about mass incarceration in general in the United States.
Very important topic here. And Bob, could you just explain what would the Quakers' connection be with the prison industrial complex right there? Why would the Quakers be ones taking up this issue?
Well, you know, originally the Quakers became interested in prison reform because in the 1600s they were imprisoned by the thousands, because there was an act called the Conventicle Act in England, and it forbid more than five people from assembling for religious purposes unless you were the Church of England. So any time the Quakers had a meeting, they were put in jail. So I believe the figure was around 15,000 were imprisoned during a period of 15 years.
In the 1600s?
In the 1600s. So they, right from the get-go, they saw what prison conditions were and how prisons were treated, so they became interested in prison reform. And they've never let up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The two largest Quaker organizations, Friends Committee on National Legislation and American Friends Service Committee, have a lot of programs highlighting the use of mass incarceration in the United States, studying it and trying to eliminate it, and also focusing on the elimination of solitary housing units in prisons.
Basically, a Quaker tradition of standing up for the rights and dignity of the human being, it sounds like.
Right. The Quakers believe there's that of God in every person, and using that moral principle, they stand up for everybody, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You had provided us with a fact sheet,
right?
With statistical information that I found somewhat amazing. And many people don't understand the process of arrest and confinement. When you're arrested, and you go for bail. If you don't have bail, you go to jail. And this is prior to you being tried by a jury of your peers. And I noticed your pie chart, and if I can remember it correctly, 680,000 people. Is that right?
Well, It's at least 500,000 people are in jail because they cannot bring up, you know, come up with the bail money. The way the bail system works in the United States is this. Say your bail is posted at $100,000, all right? If you've got the $100,000, and wealthy people do, they put up that money, okay? They're immediately sprung. They never go to jail, okay? Because they're on bail until, you know,
until the
trial comes up, right? However, if you cannot come up with $100,000, they will charge you 10%. That's $10,000, okay? You never get that money back, no matter what. So this impoverishes poor families, number one. Number two, they can't come up with even $10,000 without borrowing from everybody. Then they get behind in the rent or their house payments or their water payments. I just saw a clip on this for 15 minutes. I learned more in 15 minutes about the bail system than I ever knew. So like you say, this is the first step.
Mm-hmm.
And the first step is wrong. And then you take every single step. Well, go ahead.
In between, yeah. Right. So what you're looking at is between the time that you are arrested and arraigned, it can be up to a year. So if you actually didn't do this crime, you're spending a year in jail. If you don't have enough money for bail, you go to jail.
Well, look at that young man. I can't think of his name at the moment. Maybe
from
you remember. Yeah, from Rikers.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He was in Rikers for 3 years, okay? I think his crime was stealing a backpack or something, you know what I mean?
Right.
And he came out and he committed suicide
There was a possibility that he actually didn't do the crime,
and there was
no way to find out until he has a trial, but he's sitting there for 3 years waiting for the trial under the most horrific human conditions that are so bad that it drives a young man to kill himself. A young man who all the community of peers stated was actually a strong, upstanding, sane individual. He wasn't unstable or anything. You have no idea what the inside of those
prisons
look like.
We showed
the
film, Breakers in American Prison.
Okay.
We showed that 2 months ago. Okay.
Up there at the Quaker Meeting House?
The Quaker Meeting House, okay. Open to the public. We got a film series there for about 12 years now, monthly. And it was horrific. The conditions there were absolutely horrific. And people that had been inmates at Rikers testified to the conditions. All these different inmates testified. It was just unbelievable. And then the next month, we showed the film 13th, all right, that portrays, as we begin to talk here right now, portrays the criminal justice system and the system of mass incarceration and how it evolved. Part of the film is taken up by Dr. Michelle Alexander, who wrote The New Jim Crow, a seminal book, which should be read by anybody interested in mass incarceration.
Should probably be read by every single high school senior in the entire United States, what I would think.
I didn't want to overplay it, but
okay. There's my biased opinion, fake news coming your way. I didn't actually even know really the meaning of the 13th Amendment that's so stark is the fact that it says slavery shall be abolished in the United States except for punishment of a crime. So technically, slavery is still legal in the prison industrial complex.
Well, it's always interesting how there aren't any jobs until you go in prison.
Hmm.
And then there are many, many jobs, many, many companies employing people in prison for a dollar an hour or less.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's an awful thing to have to go to prison to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And then the system is self-perpetuates because if you have a private prison, you need prisoners. Prisoners, you need crime.
That's right.
Right. So you can never say that your objective is to lower crime. That's not possible because you need crime to get prisoners to run your private prison, like any other. Like if
it's
selling donuts, I need people that like donuts.
It's called fiduciary responsibility to your stakeholders to maximize profit.
Exactly.
It's an actual law from 1917 where you actually have to maximize profit. So if you're not working hard enough to get those profits in by getting more prisoners, then you're breaking the law.
If I own a private prison, it's my obligation to my shareholders to grow my business.
Yeah.
I can't grow my business unless I have more prisoners.
Yeah.
And I can't have more prisoners unless more people are arrested and thrown in prison.
Right. So therefore, the main cause of crime, it would be
that's
most likely
started,
poverty.
Right.
So the interest is keeping poverty as low as possible.
In public prisons, all right, in New York State, if you look at a map of the prisons in New York State, they're all around. They're all up in the North Country. These are some of the major employers in the North Country. And prison officers have said that they're not interested in programs in New York City because that will eliminate their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They depend upon this.
There was a correctional officers union, I believe, that just came out straight up, like, honestly saying, look, we don't want to legalize marijuana. 75% of incarcerated peoples are nonviolent drug offenders. So they're either trying to make a buck, slinging a little this or that on the corner, or they're a casual user that got busted. Nonviolent drug offenders. So the correctional officers say, you legalize marijuana, that's 50% almost of our entire prison population of 2 million or whatever it is. That's a million people that just eliminate however many thousands of jobs. So they said that, you know, we're going to be out of jobs if you legalize. Like, what kind of rationale is that? But, I mean, I get it. In the 1970s, they dropped the price of milk. They eliminated all the local family farms. They basically introduced big ag, get big or go home. And they cut a deal. Rockefeller almost cut a deal with these farming communities. He's like, look, guys, don't worry. The farms will go crash, tank. Your kids aren't going to have jobs on the farm anymore. However, we're going to move a bunch of prisons upstate, and we're going to make them correctional officers. And it almost was as simple as I'm describing it, from my understanding reading. Then again, read my T-shirt. So it's a pretty interesting history here in New York State. In our WGXC listening area, there are how many prisons? Does anyone know? It's more than you would think. How many? Five? Well, then you have Brookwood Secure Center for boys, Brookwood Secure for girls. You got Hudson Coxsackie, like you just said. There's a Greene County lockup. There's also the Columbia County lockup. Those are all in our – we're not a huge listening area, but that's already six I've mentioned, right?
In the Greene County Jail, they're considering spending almost $100 million to redo, yeah.
That's right.
That's right, Tom. They want to expand.
They're having a debate now as to whether or not they want to combine the two or Columbia and Green, or leave them separate and just have Green County build their own one.
Is there solitary confinement in the jails, or is it just the prisons?
It's probably the prisons, Bob. The jails, the county lockup's a lot different than the prisons.
Solitary confinement in jails and prisons?
As far as I know, there's solitary confinement in U.S. prisons and the state prisons. I'm not too sure about county jails.
Right. I mean, I'm sure they'd find a way to put you in solitary in the county jail if they felt like they absolutely had to, if that's how they felt. But I'd like to back up a minute, Bob. If you could just go back to this display, if you want to call it a display, or what you're doing at the Columbia County Fair, you're actually building a mock solitary confinement cell. And how is this going to work? You're going to have people walking by. They're going to walk by and be like, what is that? What are the handcuffs doing? And how is this going to work? What is the intent to try to engage the fairgoers?
Well, the replica that we have, we borrowed from a New York yearly meeting, and it's been pre-built, and it's going to be assembled on site. So people will come by, and we'll have a sign saying what it is, and people will be really curious, because there's a door on it.
Like, what kind of ride is this?
Yeah, exactly. And there'll be a door on it. There'll be a chair in it in which people can sit, and we'll have a dark. There'll be two walls will already be darkened because of the way the booth is arranged, and we'll be able to darken the other two walls, too, if people want to be, to simulate it more exactly. And we're... basically, Quakers like to have people experience things for themselves. We're not going to say, oh, solitary confinement is bad. Why don't you come in and sit, and we have a five-minute limit, and then tell us how you feel when you come out. And we're going to have post-it notes, and they can write their feelings down. We'll put it on the side of the solitary confinement unit. And then we'll assemble those notes at the end and mail them to our state legislators. Mm.
This is very fascinating. Now, tell me how it was to get your application in for the fair. Did you meet any resistance for this? This is a very unique idea for a county fair, as far as I know.
Right.
And how did that go?
I was thinking about that when I read your email. I said, he got managed to get this into the fair?
You know, Ann Rommel is right around the corner. She's a Quaker. And she really, she was the one to handle all that. In fact, this is really her idea. And she got the booth arranged to be delivered to a New York Yearly meeting. She did all negotiations with the fair. The fair people have been extremely helpful from the get-go on it. But as you say, this is a very unusual.
Right.
Another thing we're going to try to do, I don't know if we can do this or not, there's usually an exhibit of prison art at the fair. And if we thought if somehow we could get a few pieces of prison art put in our booth, that would be interesting. We're also going to have letters there that you can send to Senator Marchione and Assemblyman, help me out here, our local senator.
McLaughlin?
Yes.
Steve McLaughlin?
Steve McLaughlin, yeah, Marchione.
Right. Because I know for a fact that Marchione is not supporting the Hall Act at this moment. So we have letters to, as a humane alternative to the Long-Term Incarceration Act. See, what happened was, 2 years ago, the ACLU brought suit against New York State because of the extensive use of SHUs, solitary housing units, all right, in New York State, because they were just using them all the time for any kind of infraction, all right? So they have, there's an agreement now in place, and it's being implemented, and it's reducing the use of solitary confinement, okay? There's only like, it used to be like 80 reasons why you could use it. Now it's like down to 40 reasons. You know, you can't just say, oh, you did this, you got to go in solitary confinement, all right? And they're limiting the duration in solitary confinement. But there still is no prohibition to sending somebody under 21 years old into solitary confinement. There isn't. And you can... I just read the agreement, and I know you can be in solitary confinement for at least 90 days. And the UN has ruled, the General Assembly of the UN has ruled that more than 15 days in solitary confinement constitutes torture.
Bob, there's adults that spend years in solitary, and what are some of the side effects of that?
Well, first of all, the solitary is often used for people that are mentally ill, okay? So because the facilities that treated mentally ill people were closed, as you know, right, in New York State, and they were supposed to have local facilities and never materialized. People became homeless, and then people became jailed. And so a lot of the people going in are already mentally ill when they go in. But if they are not mentally ill, and if you go in for a prolonged period, like more than 15 days, you begin to exhibit symptoms of a mentally ill person, okay? You got sensory deprivation. You have communication deprivation. A person's main need in life is a need for connection.
Human contact.
Human contact, back and forth.
So and even the food just gets slid under the door.
Oh, yeah. In fact, the thing is that what they did... Until this agreement was implemented, they had what they called a loaf that they gave people in solitary confinement. It was inedible. It was composed of baked flour and meat and vegetables. And now they have eliminated the loaf, and they have to serve a regular meal that other people get, you know, in solitary. But they were, I mean, you just cannot believe the way things were going on. And so things are being improved gradually, but even after this agreement, there will be thousands of people still in solitary confinement unit. That's why it's necessary to pass the Hall Act. But that act it has a number of sponsors in the Assembly, but not so many in the Senate. And it's kind of stalled right now in the legislature. It won't be brought back up until next session.
So the name of the act is the HALT Act.
Right.
It's the HALT, SHU, Solitary Housing Units in New York State. And can people call their local assemblymen or senators and make a difference here?
Sure they can. They can call up and tell them they support the passing of the Hull Act. And as you say, the name of it is the Humane Alternatives to the Long-Term Solitary Confinement Act, H-A-L-T.
Now, what I wanted to ask you was that information, is that the information that I received with the copies of the letters and the pie chart, is there a website where that can be easily accessed?
Actually, no, because what I did was I pulled this information together from a whole bunch of different websites, you know, and at the moment we don't have it set up on our website. No, that's a good idea. In fact,
yeah, because that letter, I think you have a form letter in there.
Yeah, I'm going to make a note on that right now to see if we can't get more up on our website.
And this is the Old Chatham Friends Meeting House. This is the Quakers of Old Chatham. They've been here a little while. I want to say, 17 something.
We haven't been in that. You know, the funny thing is we have been up the road in Rayville. The meeting started up there, a meeting house started up there in the late 1700s. And then it moved to Powell House. There was a 50-year lapse between when that meeting was laid down and when it was started at Powell House Quaker Conference and Retreat Center. So we started 50 years ago there. And then 3 years ago, we moved from Powell House right across the street and built a new meeting house. Okay? So we use each other's facilities.
And if you've never been up there, it is one of the most peaceful places. If you just drive up and just get out of your car and sit down, you really don't have to do much more than that. If you've never been up there, my bride and I used to go when we lived in Chatham Center, so we were very close to it, and it was a place that you could just go and chill out. You could actually just, I don't know what's up there.
Well, they're pacifists, man. It should be peaceful.
It's Quakerism up there. When you go in there, you go sit down up there, and it's just peaceful.
Well, the Quakers are also known not just for their pacifism, but as Bob is explaining here, for the standing up for the rights and dignity of human beings, human rights. Also, I believe historically the Quakers were able to make treaties and friendships with the Native American Indians, which other groups from Europe weren't very successful in doing. Murder, murder, murder. And, it's an ancient tradition, basically, at this point. You know, hundreds of years old, the Quaker tradition. So I applaud that. And we're continuing it. Bob Elmendorf is talking about his display at the county fair here in Columbia County. And I'm glad you mentioned the book by Michelle Alexander, The New Jim Crow. This is an eye-opening book by Dr. Alexander, is it?
Right.
That shows about the prison industrial complex here in the United States, which dwarfs, you know, per capita, the amount of prisoners that China has. We have more, I think, per capita.
Are we second to China, or just
are we
more?
Second? Or we're, well, per capita, or whatever it is, or percentage. I don't know how
what we've got are, we got 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners.
There you go.
Okay. So way ahead of China.
Wow.
Okay. It's astronomical. What we have is 2.3 million people in prison in the United States. It's 4.9 million people on parole. Okay, there's 100 million people right now that have been in prison in the United States. Now, a really interesting book to read is "Becoming Miss Burton" by Susan Burton, and the foreword is by Dr. Michelle Alexander. And it's about how a woman was incarcerated repeatedly, but finally was able to turn herself around because they sent her to a drug rehab center that they normally send white people to, you know. And she got into that center, and, of course, they were doing the right things. And she got, not only did she get turned around, when she came out, she started making halfway houses for women out of prison. This book is like, you can't put it down once you start reading it. It's absolutely amazing. So she's spread all over California, you know,
You have to point out that it's one of the fascinating things that's happening here in Chatham is that the police chief here has entered, began a program called Chatham Cares for You. And basically, if you have a drug problem, you bring yourself and your paraphernalia to the police department. There's no charges filed against you. And they go down and they find you a bed. Mm-hmm. They hunt someplace down for you to go. And the program has been going, I think, for about a year now. And it's very successful. You'd like to see more drug addicts treated that way. Because it is an illness. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, that would cut down the jail population considerably. But
it's a really good point. Yeah, protecting and serving those who need it most. Bob, what else you got for us there? I know you're packed full of information. You got websites and info about this national crisis here.
We're going to be handing out different brochures at the fair. One of them is just a fact sheet on solitary confinement itself. And the fact that often vulnerable people are targeted, LGBTI people are targeted, mentally ill people are targeted. Right now there is a law proposed, but has stalled in Crimes and Corrections that says no one under the age of 18 can be put in solitary confinement. But if you can imagine, that is stalled. You know?
Well, you said the United Nations, which is quite a number of people,
mm-hmm.
192 countries, I believe, to be precise, well, 191, have decided that solitary confinement, particularly for children, is torture. So how is it that if the United Nations finds that it's torture, we still are able to get away with it here?
Well, in 2015... the U.S. government voted for an entire United Nations adopted the Mandela Rules, which prohibit any person from being held in solitary beyond 15 days. And New York currently places no limit on the total time a person can spend in isolated confinement. They will be, under this new agreement, they will be putting mm-hmm. limits on. Mm-hmm. But as I said earlier, you can still be held up to at least 90 days in solitary.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll be handing out that fact sheet. And then the other fact sheet about, we were talking about earlier, about the number of people in prison on bail and how many have a criminal record and so forth. And then we'll be listing a bunch of books, some of which we've talked about here today to read. And there will be a number of websites on the fact sheet, and both on solitary confinement and on mass incarceration. I got a chance to read a lot of books on this to prepare for it. And I read one book that Alice Green, who's an activist in Albany, recommended on Attica, Blood in the Water by Heather Thompson, 600 pages on what really happened to Attica. It's absolutely horrifying, mm-hmm. you know. And you know, the strange thing is that the conditions, all right, in Attica that were responsible for that riot exist in many prisons right now in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Overcrowding, okay, lack of counseling, lack of programs, lack of education, incarceration, as we were talking earlier, for the most petty offenses for extended periods of time, you know. Yeah, the other thing is the plea bargaining. Most people never go to trial. They're plea bargained in.
Right.
You know, and the plea bargaining is so onerous, you know, they give them the Hobson's choice. Either alternative is evil, so they end up in there. Then you come out, of prison, and everybody says, well, you know, in prison and they're out and everything should be going pretty well, right? Well, you can get no federal loans for colleges. Your voting is restricted if you're a felon in several states. You can't serve on a New York State jury if you're a felon. In some states, you can't have food stamps if convicted of a drug felony. You can be banned from federal housing. You have to check the felony box on employment app- patients. You had no education in prison, and often before that, your schools were so substandard that you didn't have an education prior to that. You have difficulty getting medication, getting a photo ID and a driver's license. So how in heck are you going to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, plus all the onerous probation or parole requirements? It's not going to happen. You're just recycling.
Once a felony conviction is on your records, it's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on the on the internet, you'll actually have to look up felony-friendly companies, mm-hmm. The ones that will at least give a person with a felony record a chance. I believe the Marriott Corporation is one of them, but there are not very many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Very many at all.
Oh, the other thing I wanted to say is we're going to be selling a book by Daniel Joseph called Under the Walnut Tree, and it portrays his time in of 30 years in prisons, a lot of them in California. And actually, he's going to be coming, and he'll be helping us staff the booth, and he and his wife will come for a shift at the fair, too.
Okay, the Columbia County Fair. Branching out.
And if I might give a plug to the March for Justice, because it links into the Attica. The March for Justice will be leaving Harlem next Saturday, and they'll be marching about 10 miles a day, every day, all the way up until all the way up here to Albany. And it is at Albany where they'll be culminating on the day that is the anniversary of the Attica Uprising.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say the date exactly, I think.
I can. It's going to be, I think it's September 13th.
13th, right? Right.
That's 1971, was it?
Yeah.
That was Governor Rockefeller. If some of you young ones out there don't know, it's so when there was an uprising in the prison. Mm-hmm. Prisoners took over.
Right.
And Rockefeller sent in the National Guard with machine guns and machine gunned down, dozens and dozens of prisoners, made the rest of them crawl through mud to later get tortured in the most horrific stories.
They will be here on that day, the Alliance of Family Justice, and they will be doing that March for Justice. A lot of that we're going to be trying to cover on WGXE as they make their way up from Harlem. Albany.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because a lot of area churches have reached out and said that they can house the marchers. And I know Paul House Quaker Conference and Retreat Center will be housing them for one night. And United Methodist Church in Castleton on Hudson will be doing another night. And we don't have quite all the churches in place yet, but we're very grateful for people that have volunteered to help.
I've been in contact with Sophia Elijah, who's directing that, and we hope to be hearing from them daily if we can, at each place that they march to on their way up here, to really let people know. And by the way, in that particular march, when they're coming through your area, you can join in and walk with them for however long you feel like walking.
And the purpose of that march is for?
To point out the incarceration rate and the and some of the abuses. I believe they list the things that they want for the legislators.
Right in New York State. Right in New York State.
Right. Right.
Okay then. Yep.
The Alliance, I'm going to say it's not.
You just said it correctly. Yeah. I'm trying to remember what it was. Yeah.
It's the March for Justice, but the name of the organization is Alliance for Family, AF. You know what? I'm going to have to look at it.
I'm looking it up.
And we're finishing up just here with Bob Elmendorf. Bob, I want to say thank you again. He's going to be at the Columbia County Fair with his solitary confinement display for you to experience should you be there. Look out for Bob and the Old Chatham friends.
Kieran, and I thank WGXC to for letting me explain how Old Chatham Quaker Meeting is putting on this exhibit.
Okay, much appreciated. Much appreciated.